1, 2, 3, 4. We get live right now, man. It's going down. Excited for the season. You know, we coming off a playoff win. I mean, you know, we had a couple wins.
Welcome to the BrewHoop podcast. I'm Adam Paris, co-managing editor of of BrewHoop.com, and I'm joined as per usual by Kyle Carr and Riley Feldman. Fellas, how are we doing?
We're doing well. It's an honor to be back on the Milwaukee Basketball Bucks podcast presented by BrewHoop staffers. I'm doing well. It's really hot here. I came back from the sauna a little while ago, so I've just been sweating all day, and I'm ready to talk basketball to help take my mind off of how damn humid it is around here.
I'm also good. I've spent the last basically month playing the new Legend of Zelda. It's been great. I think I've already put in like 30 something hours, and I don't think I've made much progress in the story. I could not imagine being someone with ADHD trying to play this game because there's too much stuff that can just distract you and get you sidetracked, but it's such a fun game. So that's pretty much all I've been doing since the Bucks got. It was actually good timing when the Bucks got eliminated, because then it allowed me to fully focus on this game instead of watching any semblance of basketball.
So do you think conceptually Drew was out there? He's like, I could stop Jimmy Butler, but I know Kyle's got things to get to, so let's just let him get past me again.
I truly think that's what Bud was thinking. Was like, let me just throw these two games that we're up by 16 points. We gotta have the Bucks fans be able to play this new Zelda game before. We gotta have the full commitment.
Bud was having like a vision quest in the moment to call the timeout, and it was like just you on the Switch in his mind. He's like,
Marjan is just chilling with his Switch, playing Breath of the Wild, like, oh man, I can't wait for this new game.
God. Well, I have enjoyed seeing the clips of Tears of the Kingdom online. I haven't been able to, I don't have a Switch, so I need to pick one up just to play that. But, so I'm jealous of you, Kyle. But, I don't know if I'm actually jealous of him, but for Adrian Griffin, he's opening up a new chapter of his life. So the Milwaukee Bucks, since we last talked, which last time Kyle and Riley talked was breaking down basically right after the Bucks' total collapse. It was actually before Mike Budenholzer was fired, so we haven't even talked since then, so a lot to break down. But Bud is out, Adrian Griffin is in, after a very long protracted and, like, per Zach Lowe, very extensive, exhaustive, well-done, thorough, in-depth coaching search. The Milwaukee Bucks have hired Adrian Griffin. He spent 15 years as an assistant in the NBA with Skiles, Tibbs, Billy Donovan, Nick Nurse most recently. He was with Nurse for 5 years in Toronto, worked with Team USA coaching staff for the 2014 Olympics, also had a brief stint as a player with the Milwaukee Bucks. So there's some history there. Known as a defensive specialist under his time with Nurse, and all of the reporting kind of talks about how Nurse, you know, expanded what his assistant coaches were able to do. But for the most part, it seems Griffin is known as a defensive guy. The other part of it is obviously in the background was, of course, some domestic violence allegations against him in August 2020 from his wife. Filed a libel suit in 2021, which was later abandoned. There's his kids have also commented on the matter. So there's a lot of stuff in the stew for Adrian Griffin. But Kyle, what was your reaction when the hire actually came down?
Initially, when I found out about the domestic violence allegation, I was kind of like, oh, this is not great. And I don't know how the Bucks are going to approach that, because if they get questioned on it, whenever he has his press conference, so that should be interesting. But he's also an assistant, so it's kind of hard for me to be like, okay, cool. Like, yes, I know exactly like what they do. There's a track record. You know, if it was, you know, Frank Vogel or Monty Williams or Nick Nurse, I'm like, okay, I see what they've done as a head coach, so I can kind of get an idea. And I think that's kind of the gamble with trying to go with an assistant that's never been a head coach before, is you don't know what exactly you're going to get, because it sounds like it was between him and Kenny Atkinson. I had preferred Atkinson more, just because I at least knew there's a track record of, okay, he did pretty well with the Brooklyn Nets team that didn't have a lot of stars, and there was a lot of players developing, and it's not really his fault that he got forced out by Kyrie and KD so they could hire Steve Nash, which looks more and more like a ridiculous decision. So I'm okay with Adrian Griffin as a coach. Like I said, I'll be intrigued to see how he does. You know, I think having a former player might be it has pros and cons in that aspect, but I'm not going to sit here and act like, okay, yes, we're going to get this like great defensive strategy, or we know like what his tactics are, what that means for most of this roster. I don't think really to give any clue about, but he interviewed well enough and he got the approval from Giannis. So I think that's kind of says a lot right there, that whether it's a good or a bad thing, but the fact that he's already got buy-in from Giannis is that, I mean, that says a lot about his interviewing and his candidacy.
My initial take is the same as Kyle's. I have no idea about this guy. I don't know anything about his background. Yes, he's a defensive specialist. The Raptors normally have a pretty good defense that might be also personnel based. I'm not sure if Griffin will be able to do the same exact thing here, how much change there will be. The other through line, there's a lot of ass covering going on all over the place. So everyone and their sister who has a Twitter account knows directly from someone that Giannis was he was vehement about it being Griffin or whatever. I think that was Shams who said that. I think, can't remember who it is over at Yahoo. He was talking about the like reports all over the place. Yeah, this is Giannis's guy. So who gains from it being like Giannis is the one who picked this guy? Giannis, maybe from like showing he can flex his muscle or being really a true believer. Adrian Griffin trying to get some clout, like I'm the Giannis approved guy, or the front office being like, hey, yeah, we're paying this guy not as much and he's not proven and it's mostly because Giannis liked him. So that's coverage. And then also the Zach Lowe, like they were really thorough. Seems like covering for the fact that everybody was clowning the shit out of the organization after we just stumbled our way out of the playoffs again, and things look really bleak really fast, depending on how the offseason goes here and with the roster. So not an auspicious beginning that so there seems to be so much coverage going on of like, see, we know what we're doing, but like Giannis was the guy who he's the one who picked the guy sort of at the end. Like obviously Griffin, like Kyle said, interviewed well enough to get to this point, to get to the final stage, but not necessarily like a really triumphant or confident showing from the organization through the back channels, it seems to me. And I'm sure it'll be fine if and when, if they ever do a press conference. They may not. We may never see a press conference with Adrian Griffin. We don't know yet. But it'll be interesting kind of seeing how the discussion between him and the media and Horst and how that all kind of like plays out. Because I think people are going to be rightfully going after like, hey, we've heard a lot about Giannis. This is like Giannis's guy. Like, what does that mean? And I think that's an interesting dynamic to keep an eye on. Like, Giannis reacting to the Budenholzer firing and say like Giannis wanting a coach he can quote unquote connect to on some level. It's not that he didn't connect with Bud, but maybe like Kyle said, the player to player thing, but there's just a lot of noise around the Griffin hire that I think makes it more unique than just like a first time or an assistant getting his first time head coaching job than your normal situation like that, I guess.
Yeah,
what I think there's I think there's also the aspect with Zach Lowe, because we all remember how after the GM hiring and how much of a mess that truly was, just because it was like, okay, we have this finalist and he's the only one, he's gonna get the job, and then and it was just like, nope, it's gonna be someone else. I think like Riley said, there's a lot of ass cover, but also in a way that it's showing more competence. Of okay, we are following everything we want to do. Yeah, Giannis is vouched for this guy. We're gonna stick with this guy. We're not gonna have this appearance of we already have infighting with a new owner with Haslam coming in and Lazarus going out. We don't need any more. We're not gonna have the infighting. We're all gonna be on the same page. We're all set. And I think maybe that's what contributed to it. But yes, it was kind of everyone's kind of making sure that this doesn't look like a mess, which I'm okay with because that at least shows improvement. As opposed to the horse hiring.
And ultimately, if Giannis went to the dinner we can talk about and said, it's either Griffin or my future here is going to be uncertain, be like, Adrian Griffin, come on down. We are so excited to have you as our next head coach, if that's the case. So I also understand if that was really if that was a key thing, a key component, which it sounds like it was, I understand that weighing quite heavily on the process as well.
Yeah, I think you're right, Riley, about all this stuff swirling around the Griffin hiring being the main talking point right now. And it's not because I don't think Adrian Griffin's qualified. He's been an assistant forever. Like, he very well could do a good job, but there's no real information for us to do right now to extrapolate out what he could possibly do with this roster. Most of the information we basically have would be what could he possibly change from Bud, and even that is hard to know without seeing just some genuine basketball from him. So I want to zero in on the Giannis thing. Him, to me, I never really forget the conversation. I feel like in a conversation all of Bucks Twitter had about the Thanasis signing, which I think in retrospect seems okay. But to me, Riley, this seems like basically the logical endpoint of what that was, right? Like, Giannis giving over some power to Giannis, which is fine. And I think it's fine in this scenario as well. I mean, if like you said, if he said it's my future or Griffin, it's like, yeah, hire Adrian Griffin. But this essentially seems like where we were going when we started at that point so many years ago with Thanasis joining the team.
Yeah, it is the logical endpoint, or at least a logical next step. The concern, though, is one, players are not always the best GMs making decisions. Two, Giannis could just still leave if it went poorly in the next 2 years. My one thing with players getting the keys to the castle, which makes total sense to me given the dynamics of the team, is if you're going to then use that power in decision making, especially something as consequential as this over the next 2-3 beyond seasons, please stick around for whatever the consequences are going to be. Like, we'll pay you a gazillion dollars to stick around, but if you're going to be given that kind of power and then you're going to exercise it, it behooves you, hopefully, to stick around and see where it goes. So I understand why the team goes that route, why they're kind of stuck in that. The main problem, though, is this offseason is going to maybe be the pivotal one that decides whether we're going to kind of shoot back up to relevance right away and be an actual contender into the playoffs, like into second, third, whatever, to the finals. Or do we very quickly, because of the CBA, because of the roster, because of the contracts, turn into like the Portland of the Midwest, where it's like we got this one guy and then everything else is like impossible to build around because we just don't have much going on. So that's why I'm nervous about it, because you understand why they do it, but you really hope the front office is like, this, not in spite of Giannis liking this guy, is the exact right hire for what we're trying to do for the next 2 or 3 seasons, because that could be pretty much it, barring some complete like acrobatic GMing going on, which we will see in the near future. But I agree, this is how it ends up from the Thanasis thing. So at least he didn't say Thanasis has to be coach. Appreciate that. That's good. So counter blessings, I guess.
I wouldn't mind if he was an assistant coach, though. Maybe we just free up that one roster spot.
Please. But
Kyle, you also were talking about, I think the other conversation is you were talking about the other candidates. It sounded like it was basically down to Nurse, Griffin, and Atkinson. And Nurse pulled out probably just for optics. But what was your thought on why you might have been leaning towards Atkinson, and what do you think? Why do you think maybe the or pros and cons of going with Griffin, sort of the fresh face?
Yeah, like I said, with having that experience as a head coach, he did a relatively solid job as well with a Brooklyn Nets team that didn't have any stars. It was a team that looks like the current iteration of the Brooklyn Nets, where there's some good players. There's a lot of guys that would be excellent role players for a championship contending team. And he was able to kind of squeeze as much out of that as possible. It seemed like guys liked him. He seemed to also have more creativity on the offensive side. So those are kind of the reasons. But with Griffin, I think the pros is because we don't know what he's going to throw out there. It is kind of nice to have a just completely different set of eyes and being able to see what's there. You know, things obviously could get stale with the Bucks offense with Budenholzer there. I mean, it was kind of all right, we got these three guys. Hopefully two of them play well and we can see what happens after that. Well, now it's like, okay, are you going to be able to, like, what sets are you going to be able to run? Are you going to be able to make the adjustments? If this guy is the defensive specialist, how do you scheme, you know, a defensive game plan so that what happened against Miami with Jimmy Butler doesn't happen again? And, you know, if you're going to continue contending in the East, you're going to have to figure that out with Jason Tatum. You're going to have to figure that out with Joel Embiid. You're going to have to figure that out with potentially Jimmy Butler again. Like, you're going to have all these guys that are going to need, you're going to need to figure out how to slow them down. So I think there is pros in that, you know, it's a new set of eyes. We don't know what he's going to do. And that could be, it's, I guess there's nothing, we have nothing to say like, okay, he can't do it. On the con side, we also have nothing that could indicate, yes, there is a plan. This is what he can do. How does that affect the roster that he has? Like, is he going to be able to put in whatever game plans he has with this current roster that's more or less relatively locked in with the main core set of guys? So there is those aspects in terms of the pros and cons. I think the pros outweigh the cons at the current moment, just because, and maybe it's more, I'm going in with the more optimistic viewpoint, but I think there is something to it. I think there is, you know, for being an assistant this long, and he was an assistant under Skiles, he's an assistant under Tibbs, he's an assistant under Donovan. It's almost as though with three of the coaches in Skiles, Thibodeau, and Nurse, there is going to be something he picked up on the defensive side. While with Billy Donovan, while he was in Oklahoma City, probably picked something up on the offensive side as well. And he also, and it sounds like Terry Stotts is coming in to be one of the assistant coaches, which is also going to help the offensive side. So I think there is optimism, but it is a gamble to go with someone that has never been a head coach in their career, taking over a team that fired their last coach because they felt they are underachieving and should be, if not winning championships, at least being very, very close to getting it.
I think there would be something to said for Atkinson too, because he has spent time with the Golden State Warriors of recent vintage. Of he's worked with a veteran team that throws in the occasional young piece in like a Jordan Poole. The Warriors have had a couple of young guys they've tried to develop along the way. But managing that dynamic versus Griffin, where he spent the past 5 years with the Raptors, they obviously had that great the run in 2019. But since then, it's been like a lot of like weird mix of a couple of vets, but mostly young guys, and the GMing's not great. And kind of, you don't really know where the Raptors were going, are going, what their plan is exactly. And so that's a little bit of a different dynamic managing a veteran team. Now, given the coaches that Griffin has coached under, Skiles, Tibbs, Nurse, who apparently are, at least the first two, are hard asses, and the fourth one plays favorites. Griffin probably has a lot of experience of like trying to play peacemaker among players. So, and that seems to be a big dynamic for him, is or a big reason why they wanted to go with him, because he's able to connect with players. Like he espouses like how honest he is with players, good or bad, whatever it is. Seems like he, you know, based off of the reactions from some of the Raptors players, seems very well liked among the players. So maybe that's not going to be that big of a concern, but I do think that has a little bit. And also the Warriors, like they've had to manage a lot of different changes to how they approach the game. The Raptors have kind of played the same way, what feels like 3 or 4 years now. And so you got on one end a little bit of creativity year over year, the other, they just do the inflatable tube man defense. And so what does that bode for where Griffin is going to be able to change things up for the Bucks? I'm sure he will change things. But then after the first season, into the second season, into the third season, into the playoffs, we don't know any of that. Whereas Atkinson, you know, I don't know how much playoff history he even had. So it's same questions there, but just different situations they were coming from that may have favored Atkinson as a better fit for where the Bucks are in their competitive timeline is all.
Yeah, I kind of didn't. As the process wore on, the longer and longer we got away from Bud, I kind of didn't mind going for someone fresh. I think Nurse could have been good. I think Atkinson could have been good. But, like, frankly, they would have had to win a championship within their first 3 years, I think. Otherwise, they're fired. And so, you know, there's a lot of potential downside to Griffin. But I wouldn't mind if they were able to somehow, if they somehow hit on someone that could possibly last for this minor stint we're probably going to have for the next few years. If it keeps Giannis around, someone who could be around for longer, it would, that would be kind of nice to not have to go through this rotation again for whatever the second half of Giannis's career might be. So the more and more it went on, the more I was like, the standard for being successful is so high. Maybe just try someone fresh as opposed to go with the people who maybe can do it, but I have no clue. And they also bring their own sort of some of the staleness of a retread versus someone fresh, I think gives it a little excitement. And also in terms of, you know, what Griffin is going to bring, I think the biggest issue is obviously improving the offense. And what did you think, Kyle? This is just my perception. It seemed like there was more excitement for Terry Stotts joining the staff as an assistant than the head coaching hire.
I think a lot of it is because with Griffin being more of a defense guy, it's like, okay, cool. But the reason why the Bucks flamed out of the playoffs this year, it was defense could figure out Jimmy Butler. But we have seen for years that if threes are not falling, as Riley says, it is a Mickey Mouse clubhouse theme playing around. And that, I think, helped having Terry Stotts, who worked with him as this whole time as a head coach. His teams have always been good offensively, questionable defensively, but that's fine. But I think a lot of it is just you bring in a guy who, as a head coach, I think everyone would have been very sour on and probably been like, oh, this is not inspiring. But as an assistant, yeah, bring in someone that has the experience running an offense, has the experience working with a superstar and getting them good looks. I think there is something to it. So maybe that's why it's just more being the assistant. It's like less of a, you know, they have a specialized focus, which should help. So I think that's probably the biggest reason is it's more Terry Stotts is going to be there to try and help Griffin put this offense into not being chuck and pray, which I think will help.
The reason why people got excited is everybody could detect the amount of ass covering going on and names. It's just like random names. And then Terry Stotts are like, I've heard of that guy before. You're like, whoo, okay, we're good. Not only have I heard of that guy, he's been here before. He knows the organization. He's a much older form of it. I think also because Portland's offenses were pretty solid, they're used to playing with a superstar-centric mold to it. I'm interested in Stotts because he had to build up an offense for so long around a backcourt player and a smaller backcourt player, obviously super prolific, but designing an offense for him versus a guy like Giannis, that has to be an awesome challenge for a coach like Stotts or any coach really, but somebody who is going to presumably be focusing on the offensive end much more than on the defensive end. And I think if he can come, obviously threes will be a heavy part of the offense. I don't know. I'll have to read a little bit more about what they were doing in Portland during a lot of his tenure. But if you can just drill into Giannis's head, like here are ways you can play, like we can play a centric offense around you without you shooting threes, I should say. I just think it would be helpful for him. I think it's a benefit for like a Brook Lopez who started off as, okay, you're going to be 3-point guy. Now, very recently, he's been a little bit more of playing interior. What can we find some more ways to use him? You know, Drew, is there a way to get him off ball depending on personnel moves? So I think Stotts is interesting, one, because he has had some success with Portland. And Portland's offenses were decent. And so you're like, well, if you can come over, compliment the guy who may not be an offensive maestro. Sure. I think that's why people are excited. It makes sense to me, I guess.
Talking about if they can drill into Giannis's head. So I was thinking about this today. Who do you think on the Bucks roster has the most potential room for improvement still?
I feel like Marjan seems like the obvious answer, but I could AJ Green, I would be curious to see what his role is because we know he can shoot, and will Griffin be able to find a way to have him not be a complete net negative on defense? Even if it is going from this guy is worse than Jordan Wara to this guy, we just got to hide him and hope for the best. That is an improvement. So I would say AJ Green, if not, I would say him and Marjan would probably be the two. There's not really many players I feel like will drastically or even marginally improve.
Giannis is the, I assume the answer.
Okay,
Adam was,
yeah, that's what I was
hinting at.
That's
okay.
But AJ Green,
but I'm glad
you're right, Kyle. AJ Green needed to be brought up. Yeah.
For the brand, or Dante, if Dante was to end up,
if Dante
here,
was here, it would have easily been him.
For the brand, we did have to start with AJ Green. Giannis is the obvious one, if only because he can do it. We've seen him do it, and then he just did stupid stuff again. So, I'm the one thing that makes me a little nervous about Griffin is he's like, well, I'll be honest with you about like your downsides or whatever. Are you like, okay, so Giannis was not, he wasn't the one who got him the job, but Giannis had like a big say. Are you going to be able to like, one, tell Giannis to stop with the stupid stuff, and two, like make that stick? Are you, is that, how is that conversation going to go? Is that like, I'm sure Giannis is coachable. Maybe Bud was just a little more hands off. Like, this is just, here's it. And with Bud, offensively, a lot of it seemed like set it and forget it a little bit with the offense. Like, the offense is what it is. The guys will create out there whatever it's going to be. If Giannis is going to do stupid stuff, then that just kind of is the price of doing business. Will Griffin have a little more control, or Stotts or whoever's going to be working on the offense? So Giannis has the most potential, if only because he can play within himself. He can cut off some of the bad shots, and he can make life easier for the entire team. And he is one of the best players in the world. He has the skill set to mold it however, whatever direction he wants, more than AJ Griffin, if we're just being honest. Unless AJ Griffin comes back next season and he's 6'3" and still a sniper, and we just don't know about it. But yes, Giannis has the biggest room for growth. I assume you. Yeah.
That is what I was angling towards. Okay. But that being said, I will be curious, though. In terms of actual player development, this is another thing that was always kind of an interesting question. Like, I think Bud got dinged probably too much because he had great player development with like mid-career guys, but the young fellas like AJ Green, Beauchamp theoretically will slot somewhere into the rotation next year. I'm not totally sure where. Unless Horst is cooking something up this offseason, which is the other thing we don't know. Like, Horst probably knows what he wants to do this offseason, and he's probably told his new coach that, and we don't really know what that's going to be. So obviously they have the inside track on whatever it is that they think that they want to do.
We do know that while Drew was busy on a podcast making excuses for getting 50 dropped on his head, Chris and Giannis were meeting with John Horst at a nice restaurant about the coaching hiring process. So we know that much. We
right. I was going to say, one of them was openly advocating for him. The other maybe was there. We don't know. We just know he was invited. And a third guy was doing podcasts and just vibing in the offseason.
Do either of you have different view? I mean, you both sort of alluded to the fact that trading Drew might be the move, but with a month of you know, thought process, like, have you thought any more about what might be the move this offseason to try to do?
I feel as though even though I think you have to part, and more like with Chris, because it's a little bit easier, I think the three of them come back. I could see Brook Lopez being the one that might leave. Just, I mean, he's 35. You're asking a lot. We don't know what the defensive scheme is going to be and if that's going to work. So it's weird that Drew wasn't invited. That's the thing that's still like, I would think that Drew, who is on a contract that's longer, would be invited as opposed to Chris, who could just leave this summer.
I'm still pissed at Drew for being a pumpkin, so I'm still okay with trading Drew. I'd be okay with trading Chris or Drew.
I said, no one is a Buck for life besides if your last name is an Antetokounmpo,
or unless you're retiring right now, and then
right.
You can be a Buck for life if you want to be. Yeah, the month hasn't really changed my thoughts on it, if only because the Heat series was just crystallizing for all the Drew stuff, really. As we've talked about ad nauseum, the previous playoffs runs were a little up and down, to put it mildly, as well. So he's obviously a great defensive player. Really tough series against the Heat. A little concerning that based on whatever observations, like his pride or ego got a little too involved. It might have hurt the team a little bit. That's also on like Budenholzer. So there's a lot of people responsible, but I do I'm still okay with trading Drew. I'm not too caught up on that. And like Kyle said, I mean, they have probably Horst and Griffin to probably talk like, okay, what's your game plan? Can you work with Drew? Obviously anybody can work with Drew, but like, what if we were to get these guys instead or go in this direction, would you be able to work around that? So there's a chance that Drew, as great as he is as a defensive player, there might be too many downsides, and then Griffin might say, I can make something work with all these other guys or whatever. So I think it's totally on the table, obviously, because he wasn't invited to this. And maybe we're reading too much into that, but it's hard not to when he's the glaring omission between the big three. And like Kyle said, one of the two who are invited could just opt out and leave. So I think that also is significant for where Chris is going to be in the coming season and beyond, which would seem to indicate that we're probably going to get something done with him for the for at least the long term, the next couple of years. So all of that's very instructive, but yeah, I'm okay with trading Drew still, or Chris if necessary.
All right. Anything else on the coaching hire? Any closing comments?
I'm relatively glad that it was, I mean, I wouldn't say like it was a quick, easy process, but at least there wasn't a dragged out. It wasn't messy, because I think on the last side, Riley and I would say like, I'm not coming on unless it's a complete mess of a hire. Then like maybe I'll do an emergency pod, but there wasn't. And I think that's good. I'm intrigued to see what happens now in terms of what his staff looks like, what he's going to do with this roster, if there is going to be a press conference and answering questions about the domestic violence allegations. I don't know how much he's going to talk about it, but I feel like at this point, it seems as though Milwaukee's got their guy, and it is what it's done, I guess.
My final thoughts are, one, I hope he shows a little bit of fire. I would like to see a little fire, except for outside of Bud exaggerated face, like emoting. I wanted to love a little fire from the coach. I hope he's the kind of coach who, yes, he can be honest with guys. I hope being honest with them is also like being a little fiery, because I feel like that's been lacking a little bit with the team the past couple of years, outside of that Giannis punching that one chair in the finals. I haven't seen a whole bunch of it in games. It kind of seems a little chillaxed. I wish him all the luck in the world, because obviously if it works out, that's awesome for everybody involved. And I pray that Giannis signs the extension. He doesn't have to this season. If he wants to up it next year to get more money, that's totally cool. But I hope this is the move that, much like the Thanasis signing, might not, it's an imperfect process or imperfect outcome potentially, but if it guarantees Giannis staying on for another 4 or 5 seasons, mission accomplished. So that those are the big things. And I feel somewhat confident, as confident as you can be about an assistant you don't know much about, that we're going to get there. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the rest of the playoffs. So the rest of the playoffs happened, and they're still going on. It's the finals. But the Miami Heat, who beat our Bucks really handily, embarrassingly, then went on and beat the Knicks, and then also beat the Celtics, and now are now in the freaking NBA Finals. Honestly, I don't know. Have the Heat moving on changed at all your opinion of what happened with the Bucks, Kyle?
No, it's just a little. If anything, I'm more annoyed, because they could have beaten the Knicks. And looking at Boston, maybe Milwaukee gets pants by Boston. I don't know. But all it shows me is, I know losing as a one, it's just losing in the first round as a one seed is just annoying. And yes, Jimmy Butler has seemingly come back down to earth after his incredible performances. It seems he has cooled off a bit, only for Gabe Vincent to kind of become the new main guy. I don't know. It's still the fact that they lost 2 straight games with a 16-point lead and lost both of them. It's just gonna bother me. I think that it doesn't change. It doesn't make me go, oh, at least, well, the Bucks lost a good team. No. I'm still just as annoyed as I am now about it.
Yeah, it's like the Celtics making the finals last year, or the Heat making the finals in the bubble. It's like, that doesn't make me feel.
Or the Raptors making the finals in 2019.
I was like, yeah, I mean, you know, as much fun on Twitter as busting out the transitive property is, that doesn't actually mean anything. What the thing it changes in my mind is, we shouldn't be playing in the regular season at all. We can just go for the sixth seed because, one, obviously our home court is dog shit. Like, it doesn't matter at all. How many games have we, like, pivotal games at home and we blow it? It's like, okay, so home court advantage, I'm out on it. I pushed all the chips in one last season this past year, and they just blew it. So I'm done with home court advantage. We could be a 5 seed, a 6 seed. I'm not sweating anything at all. But it does not change the magnitude of the failure. I think we probably would have gotten our asses kicked by the Celtics based off of semi-recent experience, but at least we would have been there to get our asses kicked in the Eastern Conference
Right.
Finals.
Right, losing in the Eastern Conference Finals, that at least was like the minimum we were hoping for. That's one thing. Losing in the first round, it's like, that's just bad. I don't care who it is.
So it doesn't, to me, it doesn't change the magnitude of our failure, if I'm allowed to call it a failure. What it does change up a little bit is it makes me optimistic for the coming years where things are going to get tight for us, because I was reading an article the other day about just kind of going through how the Heat had constructed their roster. I mean, it's the kind of game plan we're going to have to do, but they, if you execute on it, I mean, so many of their rotation guys for the Heat are like, we're former two-way guys. All of our two ways are just losers for the most part. And Mamu. And
it's not even a two way on the Bucks.
So all of our two ways have been mostly bust for one reason or another. Or just like free agent signings, undrafted free agents, or getting like a veteran guy at the right time or whatever. Yes, things could look bleak for us being a really dominant force, let's say 5 years from now, just based on roster and cap and the CBA and all that. But if like the front office knows what they're doing on the marginal stuff, which they have not shown that they are capable of that, but if they did, you can keep it rolling forward. Like, who would have guessed the 8 seed Miami Heat going all the way to the finals? Not me. And part of it is like Jimmy Butler, part of it is Spoelstra, but we can copy all of that as Giannis ages. So to me, that's a little comforting in that it's not going to be, we got to win this next season or next season after that, or it's like we're just totally shut out. There's always going to be the possibility, so long as you start getting the marginal stuff right. So it's encouraging from that perspective, if you want to end on a high note, I guess, or have it on a high note.
Yeah, I don't know. When they lost to the Heat, I had something happen in my life that made it very easy to emotionally eject myself from the Bucks, and then I actually get game five. I didn't even watch because I had to wake up really early the next morning and drive my family down to Charleston. And I woke up at midnight and I said, you know what? I'm just going to check the score because the game should be done by now. And when I turned it on, I turned it on just for frickin' Drew Holiday to foul Jimmy Butler with 2.1 seconds left in the game. And I turned it off and I said, you know what? I hate how emotionally invested I was in this team. I'm going back to what it was like to be a Bucks fan before any of this stupid winning. And that's made it a lot easier to just like not care at all as the Heat have moved on and not even really caring as much about what happens with the Bucks, which frankly is just like probably a better state for myself personally to be in. But the Heat moving on, I think you're right, Riley. I think like, it definitely seems like there's a flattening out of what's happening throughout the league. Like it's there's aren't going to probably be, or if there will be dynasties, they're going to be harder than ever, especially given with the new CBA rules. So it's going to be more punitive for teams like the Bucks and the Warriors to stay up high. And I think we're already seeing it. I mean, like, you know, the Nuggets are in the finals and obviously they were a 1 seed, but like, Jokic is kind of following, like about to follow the same arc that Giannis did, but just in different, you know, like different segments, because like a few years ago, he had Murray get hurt, you know, a couple years ago, he had Murray and I think MPJ were hurt. Now they were all healthy basically almost this whole playoffs, and look what's happening. So I think especially in the East, like obviously Boston is good, but they seem like they're probably about to undergo some sort of transition or transformation. So I think with the Heat making it definitely seems like it's open to the Bucks. You know, one team that will always be there though, in the Bucks way, but we may never face them are the Sixers. And it seems like they bowed out as well, Kyle.
Oh, they bought out. They bought out in the most Sixer way possible. They got to the second round like they always do. They had a 3-2 lead. They won their first game. They won game one against Boston without Joel Embiid. And it's like, oh, okay. James Harden had a really good playoff game. And then we got to game six and Philly could have closed it out. And they lost at home. So they had to go to Boston and got the doors blown off of them in game seven. And Joel Embiid and James Harden, I think, combined for less than 20 points. Tobias Harris was the leading scorer. Tyrese Maxey, like, they were bad and they choked. And Embiid had tried using Giannis's quote because Embiid cannot be taken seriously. And he was getting clowned on social media. It's now I'm finally glad that the when are you going to actually do something useful in the playoffs, Joel, is happening. I'm happy about that. Good. James Harden showed his true colors. That was great. Doc Rivers got fired. And they hired Nick Nurse, which either Embiid's going to be in the greatest shape of his life or he is going to be out before the playoffs start. I'm curious to see how that turns out. So it is what it is. If there is, and it's funny because even though Milwaukee got clowned on national stage, Philly then takes a bigger clowning on the national stage, only for Boston to then take a bigger clowning on the national. So it's kind of nice that the only good thing about the Bucks losing early is everyone's mainly forgot about it because there's these other two teams that clowned themselves more recently.
Kyle, that whole week and a half of that, the Sixers Celtics, Kyle hasn't slept like that good in years. It's been years since Kyle slept that well, knowing what was happening on the East Coast.
You know, I needed something to make me feel better. That was great. That helped me. It is gone.
It's extremely gratifying that now that Embiid has his MVP, now we can just ignore him completely for almost the entirety of the rest of his career. So he got his thing. He did his campaigning thing. He got his award, and now we can just never have to pay attention to him or the Sixers, especially with Harden leaving. I don't know what the Sixers get. Yeah, like you said, Adam, on a transition stage. But I hope him and Giannis get to play each other in the playoffs at least once during their sort of prime. I don't want them to both be, you know, 38, and then finally we get this showdown, and they're just, I mean, you know, they're just broken, and they can't do anything. I want just one prime battle with the Sixers. I would, you know, I just want to see it happen once.
Buck Sixers 4-5 series next year. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. There's like, man,
I don't know who's going to be the third best team. I don't know who between Miami and Boston is going to be up there, but we're going to get a 4-5 Buck Sixers in the epitome of this is going to be bad.
I love that because that's the ultimate loser fraud franchise leaves town. Like, it's about.
It's gotta happen now.
Yeah, let's manifest it, please. So funny.
That's rough for them. I told myself I can't clown on anyone after the Bucks thing. It was so bad.
Oh,
I
still will. I don't care.
I know, Kyle. You have different rules, and we need it. We need it for entertainment and our spirit.
I'm going down. I'm taking as many other people with me.
Kyle's on the Titanic, grabbing people like, "Don't get on that lifeboat. You're staying out here with me." You don't get down on the lifeboat, no.
It's like, oh, you're not a woman or child? Nope, you're coming down with me. you're staying here.
Oh, God. I don't know. Also, there was, you know, Monty Williams got fired from the Suns. They got Frank Vogel. Detroit hired Monty Williams for a ton of money, like an absurd amount of money. Adrian Griffin's got to be let. Although, I was thinking if they're trying to like sort of moneyball it and hire a younger head coach for a little and then pay a ton to like Stotts and all these other guys to keep them in. But I don't know. Any other thoughts on the coaching carousel, Kyle?
No, I think most of these were kind of interesting. Bud has not found a new role and Toronto is still open, which is, I think, the weirdest part because they fired Nick Nurse as soon as the regular season. They fired Nick Nurse early, and they still haven't hired a replacement. So that's curious to see how that goes. But I'm not surprised that Doc got fired and they hired Nurse. I'm not surprised that Monty got fired. I think it was just a lot of these teams are, and I think it just shows, you know, it is kind of a what have you done for me lately. And unless you're Spoelstra or Kerr or Popovich, your job can be gone the next day if you're not performing. I'm kind of surprised the Celtics haven't already moved on from their coach, considering the pantsing they got in the Eastern Conference Finals.
I'm extremely happy we did not end up with Monty Williams, because the last thing you want is the guy who Bud actually beat and looks pretty like unadjustable while we were beating him down after the first two games. I don't want to then follow that up with like that guy, much as we started the seeds in that finals of the Kumbaya, but I'm glad that didn't go that route. It's not surprising given everything that was going in Bud's personal life that he was linked, I think, tangentially as a target to the Sun. It doesn't sound like there was anything past that. If he wants to take a break, totally understand. And I think it fits him because he gets some time away, and teams that fire their coach midseason or might open up after this coming season, there'll be opportunities for Bud. Like it's not for sure, not the end of the road for him. I think he will have more head coaching opportunities. It just might be, he doesn't feel like it right now, which is totally understandable. So I don't think of that as a reflection on him as a coach or like his value around the league. It just doesn't sound like he was all that interested, which is cool. I don't really have much thoughts about anything else going on. I'm looking forward to Kyle's draft coverage. Kyle the other day in our group chat said draft prep, just draft whoever's best at 58. Like,
I don't know why we're like folks at draft prep. You have this last pick in this draft. Just show up and see who's the best player available and think good enough. Let's not waste our time. We've done this song and dance.
Horst gonna trade back.
Yeah, into the
trade back to 2024.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to if we do anything on the draft and also free agency and all that. So glad we have the coach. Interested to see where we go. I think there will continue to be big changes. I don't think we're just going to sit on our hands. I would be surprised by that. And curious to see where it goes from here.
Yeah. I'm glad Nick Nurse is in Philly. I definitely wouldn't have minded him as a Bucks coach, but it's more fun to just keep rooting against him and keep him,
I was gonna say,
him as a villain.
With all the shit talking, like calling him a war criminal. And
yeah,
like,
I was gonna say,
but he's our war criminal.
I don't know how I've been able to
a lot of old takes exposed.
I would not have walked back on those comments, but I would have been like, yeah, I got nothing. It would be really hard for me to explain. How do I support this guy?
Yeah,
I think my only other note for the draft lottery was I was talking with a coworker who's like a Rockets fan and also is a Harden stan, and I don't really, you know, that's a bad mix.
I was gonna say, is it the worst person you know? You don't have to.
No. I won't out him. He doesn't listen, thankfully. But he was talking about how he's like so hopeful that they would win the lottery, and he was like, yeah, we're sending Ime Udoka there. And I was like, oh my God, you are not going to win the lottery.
No.
That's a terrible decision.
Adam Silver's like, nah. That's... Wait, they say sent Ime to the lottery? Are you serious?
He had just gotten there.
He just got there and he just lost his previous job for what we could say is dicey behavior at, if we're just going to put in this.
Yeah. Terms. Ultimate bad karma. That was that, so I knew he was screwed then and they fell, which is great.
Yeah. Okay. That's good.
All right. Well, we need to end this call with Kyle's fresh film review today. So give it to us, Kyle.
Yeah. So I saw the Super Mario Brothers movie today, Sunday as we're recording. I went with Sterling. It was his first time going to a movie theater. He really likes Mario. He always wants to play Mario Party on her Switch, so it felt right. It was a fun movie. I really, really, really appreciate it. It's short. It's like an hour and a half. So good job, producers and everyone. Like, you knew what the goal was. Keep it short. Keep it sweet. Don't mess around. Like, we knew what had to happen. So that was good. I think there was enough kind of hidden Easter eggs and stuff that can get people that really, really care about Mario and Nintendo into it. But I think it was fine as well for like casual people to watch as well. It's a simple movie. It's not really that deep. If you can deal with Chris Pratt being Mario, I think if you can get past that, you'll have a good time with the movie. So I'll probably give it a 6 out of 10 just because it gets a big boost for being relatively short, but entertaining. So if you have a child, if you have a toddler and you're worried about, can they sit through a whole movie? if they care enough about Mario, the answer will be yes.
My only question, did they set the stage for Mario 2? Was there, did they already...
They could. Sterling's one complaint was Yoshi wasn't in it, which is a valid complaint.
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, it felt like they didn't really have that many. Like, it was Mario, Luigi, Peach, Bowser, Donkey Kong. Like, those are really, and Toad. Like, those are the main characters. And, like, there were Koopas and there were Goombas. And, like, you can see Boo in one of the scenes. But it was really only focused on that. So, could they make a second one? Sure. I wouldn't be surprised. It would definitely be just money grabbing. But I don't think they don't need to make a second one. But how it ended is, like, it would be fine if it ended just like that. They don't need to make a second movie.
How did Sterling do sitting through it?
He did great. He only had to go to the bathroom once, so I was pretty impressed with him. He just chilled, ate a bunch of fruit snacks and popcorn, and drank water. So, no, he was calm and sat the whole time. I was really impressed with that.
Are the kids still for Mario? Is Mario still, is Sterling aware of all the Mario stuff that are, like, familiar with Mario as a character, or
he's familiar, like, he knows the names, like, he knows Mario, he knows Luigi, he knows, like, Princess Peach and Bowser, like, he can recognize, and then, like I said, playing Mario Party, there's just more characters, so, like, he knows who Wario and, like, Waluigi and Daisy are, so, and, like, Shy Guy, like, he knows characters.
Okay,
yeah, Mario Party, he can actually just play that. Like, if I would choose, I would just have us play Mario Kart or something that doesn't require me to handhold him through every game, but he'll get older and he'll learn it.
You're like, let's do Mario Party instead of the movie, and I'll just do the Chris Pratt voice.
I'm not doing that. Like, absolutely not. Okay, absolutely not.
All right.
All right. Well, this has been the Brewhoop Podcast. Not sure when we'll talk to you next, because the draft is going to not be super fun. And, eventually probably will be free agency, so maybe in a month or something, but till then, go to the site. We'll have plenty of coverage, probably of some prospective draft prospects, because we do have some new additions to the staff, which are great. They're really been pumping out a ton of stuff. Michael and JT and Ari put up a great video.